We've been exploring techniques on this podcast about ways to raise and really build up a strong business that's generating you an amazing lifestyle, wealth, and the experience from life that you're really hoping to have. But there's another side to it, because once you build that wealth, even if it's just as an employee, you need to put that wealth somewhere that can grow over time and that's well protected. Now, to help you do that, there are financial advisors out there, but I've always been a bit leery of them. Certainly, they provide great advice. For example, diversification, which in some ways is a free lunch in finance, which there's no free lunch. But with diversification, if you spread out where you invest your money, if you don't put it in just one spot, you can actually maintain high rates of return while reducing your risk. So there's certainly great insight like that. But I've always been a bit nervous of financial advisors because oftentimes they're incentivized to provide you advice that may not actually be best for you. For example, permanent life insurance. While there's certainly a place for it, I've seen some financial advisors push that product on people that don't actually need it. Now, the reality is the advisor might actually earn quite a bit of money by pushing that product, but it's not necessarily good for you. On the flip side, there may be investments like low expense ratio ETFs that could be perfect for what you need in your own investing life, but they don't offer a great return for the investor. I'm sorry, the investment advisor. So there's this conflict of interest, and that's why I'm super excited today to have Chad Hufford on with us, who's going to give us some perspective on what that world is like, what are some really legitimately good techniques to use, and how to navigate this so that you can best optimize for your long-term wealth and stability. He's the owner of Veritas Wealth Management, a boutique financial planning firm that manages about $500 million. Chad, thanks for being here today.
Mike, it's my pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for having me and giving me the opportunity to share some of my experience and expertise with your audience.
Oh, I love it. This is going to be fun. I want to dive right into it. What are some of the experiences or things that you've seen that investment advisors might do that doesn't truly benefit their client?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head. A lot of times, investment advisors are giving too much investment advice and less financial planning advice, and it becomes very product focused. They aren't looking at long-term objectives. There really isn't a plan. We tell people all the time that a portfolio is not a plan. And I think in today's 401k market, where the large preponderance of folks have a target date fund that kind of matches up with when they might want to retire or when they turn a certain age and think, oh, I have a plan. No, you have a portfolio. And a lot of quote unquote financial advisors perpetuate that by selling people pieces and parts to a portfolio. But they don't actually have a plan. They don't have a strategic long-term objective or a pathway to get them there. They just have a bunch of investments. And folks often come to us, Mike, and after talking with them, we kind of get the idea that, okay, you don't really have a long-term financial plan. You've been collecting investments. And there's a world of difference between somebody who's strategically building towards a desired objective and somebody who is merely collecting mutual funds or collecting retirement accounts. And that's where a lot of people are. And it's not necessarily their fault. That's the way our industry has kind of evolved to just push products on people rather than starting with the end in mind and reverse engineering and say, where do you want to be? What do you want to be doing? What type of person do you want to become in this realm of financial independence? Let's reverse engineer that from where you want to be to where you are today. Build out this pathway going forward, this plan, and then the plan dictates what you're investing in. Your needs, your goals, your objectives dictates what your investments look like rather than what the financial advisor wants to sell.
I love that. What are some of the aspects of a really good financial plan?
Number one, it's having a target. So a lot of people don't even know what they're going to need in retirement. And this cuts a couple different ways. So number one, not having a clear objective can be really, really frustrating. People don't know what they're building. It'd be like trying to build a house without a blueprint. But the other side of that, even for people that are wealthy, there's no finish line. There's this idea of more, more, more. You can always work another year. There is not a finite target, a finite amount of capital. So what we try to get people to focus on is their retirement income needs. The we call it a job optional target. So it's the amount of income that they would need to be able to give up their paycheck to live comfortably, to be able to not take a salary from their business. What that does for entrepreneurs is it gives people an opportunity to build financial independence without having to sell their business to produce it. So they can still run it, but they don't need their business. They don't have to actually part ways from their business in order to be able to live comfortably. Because as you know, working with a lot of entrepreneurs, sometimes that is the only part of their net worth, or at least the lion's share. And outside of their business, they don't really have a lot of financial independence. And for folks that work for somebody else, you know, it just gives them that opportunity to live independently without a paycheck. But it's getting people to a place where they understand what that target is. How much money we ask, here's the question we kind of ask is, if you were to retire at the beginning of next month, how much money would you need hitting your checking account every single month to give you the feeling of security that you wouldn't need your job, you wouldn't need your paycheck? Doesn't mean you retire right away, but it gives you the independence where you have a job optional lifestyle. And that's, so that's kind of the initial starting point, is getting a target. And then from that, we can figure out about the amount of invested capital that somebody needs to produce that amount of income. So we just start the process of identifying the long-term goal, sketching a financial blueprint, so to speak, and connecting that long-term target to their current actions today.
Yeah, it's so simple, but so powerful. I love the notion of job optional situation where you can do your job if you so choose. Now, you talked about that flow of income after, we'll call it retirement, even if you're not actually retired. Now, with your asset pool that you build up, do you set it in such a way that that asset pool stays constant and you're just taking the income out of the interest every month? Or are you actually reducing that asset pool down over the expected life expectancy that you have remaining?
So that's a great question. And the short answer is we never want to get people into a decumulation phase. And a lot of people talk about financial planning in this accumulation phase and a decumulation phase. And if you ever enter into decumulation, that just means every day you're taking a step closer to poverty. And the problem with basing it off a life expectancy is you might have a life expectancy of 85, and 84, you're not quite dead yet. And the problem with a decumulation phase is you have to die, your spouse has to die in order for your plan to work. Now, you might be able to live to 100, but there's a finite amount of time that you can spend before your money runs out. So we want to be able to build a plan where the money outlives the individual and not the other way around. And it provides income into perpetuity. So if they're living off of just the income, you think of it from a real estate standpoint. It's like if you own a bunch of apartment complexes, you're not selling off any of the individual units. You're not stripping the doors off of the apartments and selling the doors and the windows to try to produce income. You're just collecting the rent. You still own what's producing the money. You still own the means of income production. Well, when you own thousands of tiny parts of companies across the globe, you can own the means of income production. And if you never decumulate, which means, again, going back to that target, having a specific target for how much wealth that you'll need to support your job optional lifestyle, it also gives you an idea of what you are allowed to live off of in those early years, so you're not stealing from the 80, 85-year-old version of yourself. Mm-hmm. So that the metaphor that we give people, Mike, is like an orchard. If you build up an orchard large enough, you don't have to sell the trees to sustain yourself. You just pick the fruit. Well, if you still own the trees, they can actually gradually get bigger, even if you're picking the fruit every single month. And you don't run into this issue of what if I live longer than expected? Because even if somebody has a tremendous amount of wealth and they can live comfortably until they're 100 years old, in the back of their mind, there's still that voice that's reminding them they have to die to make their plan work. Mm-hmm. And it creates more of a scarcity mindset. And as you know, people living in a scarcity mindset, they make more mistakes. They don't have as good of a long-term view, and they simply don't enjoy the financial freedom as much as they should, because there's that little voice in the back of their mind reminding them that this plan could all fall apart if they live too long.
Hey, it's Mike. Let's beat the banks at their own game. Traditional banks don't have great interest rates, but they charge businesses like Norhart higher rates, and they keep all the profits. Why don't we cut out the middleman and connect directly, thus leaving more for both of us? Invest with us and earn fantastic interest rates. To learn more, visit norhart.com. That's norhart.com, and click on invest. So if you're looking to grow your returns, then why not join Norhart Invest today and get more than you ever could at a bank? This is an offering by Norhart Invest. Investments can only be made through the Norhart Invest website. For more information, including the offering circular, please visit norhart.com/invest. Yeah, that's really insightful. I love the fact that you avoid the decumulation phase. It requires that you need to have more money up front, but that's a smarter plan and place to be in. Now, you alluded to having small stake in a bunch of companies. Do you recommend clients to have a large equity position in retirement, or how do you handle the volatility there?
Well, so this is a great question. I am a firm believer in owning companies and not lending to them. And obviously, you know, this advice is general. You know, we give very specific advice, and you don't want to take a one size fits all approach. You don't want to be, your financial goals shouldn't be shoved into a category that kind of looks like you, and then everybody gets the same portfolio or the same financial plan. It should be very much customized to your goals, your long-term needs. But that being said, Mike, I think we can all agree we live in a rising cost world. The tendency for people to move into fixed income as they get closer to retirement is very prevalent. And again, a lot of that has been perpetuated by my industry, and it's very destructive because, just simply on its face, a fixed income in a rising cost retirement is a recipe for disaster. That just doesn't even sound like a good idea. Yeah. But the problem is that we focus on principal rather than income. And financial independence comes from income. You don't take your 401k balance to the supermarket. You don't take your 401k balance to Costco to buy your groceries for the month. You take income. So even if your asset base is volatile, as long as your income is stable and slowly growing over time, that's what we're going for. Let's go back to the apartment complex example. If you have this apartment complex worth $2 million and it suddenly drops to $1.8 million, you haven't lost $200,000. You just have a little bit less on your asset sheet if you sold everything today. You're still going to charge everybody rent. As long as you're able to gradually increase rents over time, the temporary price of your apartment complex doesn't really matter, because if you do this right, Mike, you're never going to have to sell it. So to your point, we do believe that equity provides the best chance. And I say equities, I'm talking about buying companies through mutual funds, not individual stocks, because then it's less like an orchard and more like having, you know, half a dozen big trees, or maybe even a few dozen big trees. But the idea of diversification, you already alluded to this, but it's never owning enough to make a killing on any one thing, but it's also never owning enough of any one thing to get killed by it. So rather than having a handful of very large trees in your orchard, you have thousands of tiny trees, and you're producing income from all those, even as you have this roller coaster of markets, and your net worth might fluctuate wildly. Your income is steadily increasing over time. And we can ignore principal fluctuation because we're focusing on income production.
That's really interesting. So you're not really selling any of the stocks, and are you just using the dividend proceeds?
Dividends, capital gains, spinoff. And obviously, this is not a perfect analogy. I mean, there will be times where you will liquidate stocks. But this is also why it's important to have a little bit of a buffer inside your retirement plan. And I don't want to get too much into the weeds, but let's just to keep it in general terms, maybe a couple years of living expenses. What that does is allows somebody to, if we go back to our orchard metaphor, it's kind of like having a pantry set up. So if your orchard gets hit by a giant storm, you can supplement that income with what's in the pantry, because your dividends might not be as high. You might not have any capital gains that year. So rather than chopping down your trees and selling them or liquidating shares of your mutual funds, you can supplement that with this emergency fund that you've built inside your retirement accounts.
That's brilliant. I love that insight. You're actually providing the stability that you need in retirement while also not limiting your upside potential in just a fixed asset environment. That's amazing. Now, one thing I often see financial advisors say, they throw a quick plan together and they might say something like, well, if you look at it over the next, 40 years, if the stock market returns an average of 10%, then you're going to do really well. And I go look at the actual numbers. And if you look at the last 100 years, the actual rate of return, not the average rate of return, is something more like 6%. I think to myself, like, this isn't adding up. How do you look at building your assets during your working career?
Well, again, going back to what you mentioned about diversification being so important, when people say stock market, they're usually referring to a specific index. It might be the Dow Jones, it might be the S&P 500, it might be the Russell 2000. But when you diversify, you're actually spreading your wealth over many different indices. You have some small companies, you have some large companies, you have some growth companies. These are the fast, exciting, innovating companies that we all know and understand. You also have some value companies, which are a little bit more boring. These are companies that have a lot of assets, but a relatively low stock price. It'd be like going out and buying your Christmas decorations in January. It's not super exciting, but you might be getting a lot better deal. We want some international companies. We want some emerging market. What it does is it fills your orchard with a wide variety of trees that aren't all coming in and out of season at the same time. But also, what's even more important, if you do have an index that is significantly underperforming for a long period of time, you don't have all of your apples in that basket, so to speak. So it allows you to benefit from the law of averages, because you're right in that there are periods of time where a specific index might be significantly underperforming, and it might significantly overperform for a period of time as well. But you have to get through that period of significant underperformance to get to that period of overperformance, which means you've got to rely on something else to produce your income during that period. And it's being able to spread out your assets in a wide variety of different types of companies that are different from a size standpoint, different from an industry standpoint, and even different from a geographical standpoint. But over long periods of time, equities historically have returned about 7% a year above inflation. And that's the most critical piece, because a nominal return, if 10% return in a 10% inflation environment, is actually zero return. Because again, we're looking at income. That's the focus, is replacing somebody's income. Income isn't dollars and cents. Income is purchasing power. And I think investors need to look at their investments that way. What is my income growth in purchasing power? Because over the last 62 years, and that's about the age of the average retiree this year, according to Social Security Administration and Bureau of Labor and Vital Statistics, the average 62-year-old has seen a tenfold increase of costs in their lifetime. So it costs about $1,000 today to buy what $100 did the day that they were born. So when we look at retirement and people are living longer, can your retirement income plan support a 2, maybe even a 3-fold increase in costs while you're alive? So it's about perpetuating this income, which means we need to own things, not lend to companies, not buy their debt, and certainly not buying government debt. There might be a small place for that, but it shouldn't be the lion's share of our investment strategy. Real estate could fit into this too, because you're actually owning something that can increase your income payments with inflation. So your income rises at least the rate that your costs and your expenses increase.
Hey, it's Mike. Passive income is one of this year's hottest buzzwords, but what is it? Well, passive income is when the elite make money and the rest of us sleep. Here at Norhart, we decided to open up this opportunity to everyone by giving you the chance to invest with us and earn fantastic interest rates without doing a thing. To learn more, visit norhart.com. That's norhart.com, and click on invest. So if you're looking to grow your returns, then why not join Norhart Invest today and see what you can build towards? This is an offering by Norhart Invest. Investments can only be made through the Norhart Invest website. For more information, including the offering circular, please visit norhart.com/invest. Do you invest in alternative assets, things like real estate or businesses that are not publicly listed?
We certainly have clients that do that. We do incorporate that into our overall financial plans. We have a lot of folks that are small business owners, a lot of folks that are heavy into real estate. And what we do is then we use the mutual funds, the more traditional investments, if you look at it that way, to kind of fill in the gaps and cracks. I'm not a real estate expert. So we lean on folks like yourself that have more expertise in that area to make sure that these people have a holistic plan. And just going back to our initial discussion at the beginning of having an income target, somebody says, I need to replace $10,000 a month. We'll figure out what portion of that can reasonably be expected to be replaced by, maybe proceeds from a business or real estate or something like that. And then we can fill in the gaps and cracks with a mutual fund portfolio or multiple mutual funds portfolios. But going back to this idea of reverse engineering the future, it's looking at that holistic plan. Like if you are a business owner, if you do have real estate, what are all the different income sources that we can expect? Conservatively produce some projections and then reverse engineer that into the present.
I love that. From an investor's perspective, what are some of the costliest mistakes that you've seen people make?
Well, I think panic and fear, making emotionally fear-based decisions, probably one of the most common ones that we see. Sometimes it can go the other way. People can get greedy. Either one of those usually pull people outside of a diversified portfolio. They start either fleeing their investment portfolio out of fear, or they start doubling down on a very particular part of their portfolio because that piece seems to be outperforming, or it's gotten great returns last couple of years. So they sell off whatever has underperformed to buy more of what is actually the most expensive piece of their portfolio. I think both of those still fall under the category of not having a strategic long-term plan. Because if you're only focusing on your investments, which Mike, you said at the very beginning, a lot of financial planners, a lot of investment advisors, they only focus on the tool. They don't focus on what they're building. It's all about the product, not about the plan and not about the process. But if you're an investor that has a strategic long-term plan, it's easier to ignore those temporary fluctuations. It's easier to ignore the noise around us and focus on the long-term objective. Another big mistake that a lot of people make is lack of lifestyle control. They simply spend too much, which harms them on two fronts. Number one, if you're living off of 100% of what you take home today, then you need to reproduce 100% of your take home income to live comfortably. But the other side of that is if you're spending everything that you're bringing in, you have very little to plant in your orchard. You're eating all the seeds. There's nothing to plant in your orchard to actually grow fruit for the future. So it actually cuts both ways. And we see people that have really strong incomes that don't really have much to show for it, because making more money, if you have bad financial habits, doesn't actually help produce financial freedom any more than giving somebody who's a bad driver more horsepower. Giving a teenager a Ferrari doesn't make them a better driver. It just allows them to get into an accident at a higher speed. Somebody who has bad financial management with a bigger income just has the opportunity to dig themselves a deeper hole.
That's a great insight. I've seen that play out many times before as well. What are some warning signs that a financial advisor may not have your interest best at heart?
Love this question. When you are sitting down with a financial advisor, and really it should be a financial planner. If you're sitting down with somebody who's not a financial planner, doesn't mean that they're not going to still try to give you good advice, but the likelihood is they are going to be more product focused, not all the time. But when you're sitting down with somebody, they should be asking you about your goals first. In fact, that initial meeting should be very little about your current finances, and should probably not have any information about potential solutions, because you're trying to figure out the objective first. So we're recording this at the beginning of the year. A lot of people are joining gyms and getting started on our workout plan. And if you think about it, like a good personal trainer should ask you about what your goals are. If somebody is trying to lose 20 pounds for their high school reunion this summer, their workout plan is going to look a lot different than somebody who's training for a triathlon or somebody who's training to be an MMA fighter or something like that. So the tactics and tools that you use to get into shape are going to be based off of your goals for financial fitness. And that's where the discussions should start. What are you trying to accomplish? No different than finances. What are your goals? What are the obstacles that you're facing? What are your fears? Those are the questions that people should be hearing from a good financial planner. What do you want your life to look like? If you never had to go back to your job another day in your life, what would be different about your life? What would you add in that you don't have the time or the resources to do right now? And what are the pieces of your life that you'd like to eliminate or cut out in an environment of financial independence? So those types of questions are pretty indicative that you've got somebody that cares about your goals and you, not just your money and your investments.
I love that. You know, the thing that I think I most take away from your discussion today is understand what your number is. How much money do you want to take home on a monthly basis in retirement? You can do a little bit of calculation, find a financial planner to help you do it, and figure out what that investment amount needs to be in the future, and then work toward a path of getting there. I've seen it so often that people just think, oh, I'm throwing 3% of my income into retirement, but they have no idea if that is actually what they need to have the kind of lifestyle that they're hoping to have. Chad, how can people get a hold of you to learn more about you and your services?
Our website is veritasalaska.com. And it's Veritas Alaska. We started here. We were founded here, but we've got folks all across the country. And we're also on Instagram, veritas.alaska. We try to get a lot of encouraging content on there that is beyond just finances, because really this is ultimately about helping people live a more abundant life, live with more freedom and independence. And I just use finance as a tool to get people there. And I just wanted to real briefly, just what you mentioned there, Mike, I just thought of this. It's, you know, identifying a target is so important. And when you're just putting a rote percentage, just, you know, 5%, whatever, just sticking it in something, put it in a target date fund. That's exactly what collecting investments look like. And it'd be like somebody getting on a plane without knowing where the plane is supposed to land. And too many times we sign up for some sort of financial product with no idea where the destination is. And it'd be like buying a ticket on an airplane with no idea what the destination is. We don't know where it's taking us. And then we're trying to figure out how to reroute the plane in flight. It's a lot easier to identify your destination, plan your trip, your financial journey in advance, and make sure your decisions today line up with that future destination.
That's awesome. Chad, I hear that you're coming out with a new book. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. So at the end of April, Forging Financial Freedom will be released. And this book is a lot of what we talked about today. It's about the mindsets and the practices that people need to embody in order to have financial independence. And we've actually interviewed several hundred people from the Alaska oil field industry because it's a very, very stressful, volatile industry. And what we've seen, Mike, is that industry has a tendency to take the frustrations and challenges that everybody faces when planning for the future, and it magnifies them. So it gives us an opportunity to illustrate even better the obstacles that normal everyday people deal with when planning for the future, and take the mindset and perspective lessons from that. Because I just believe there's a lot of plans out there and a lot of good financial planners that have good strategies and solutions for helping people build wealth. But without the right mindset, without the right perspective, people won't have the endurance to execute their plan long enough to see the results. So that's why I wrote this book. And we'll get you the link to that, Mike, and as it gets closer to releasing this episode, and we'll throw in some special bonuses specifically for your audience.
I love that. So check out Chad's new book. We'll put a link in the description. And Chad, thank you so much for being here and sharing a little bit of your insight.
Mike, it's been my honor, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here. Thank you.